This episode of Dummy is sponsored by Audible. You can get a free audiobook download and a free 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/holler. There are more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and you can play them from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To get your free audiobook and support this podcast, just visit audibletrial.com/holler.
Hello and welcome to Dummy, a twice weekly conversation among editors and friends of Howler magazine. My name is George Qureshi. I'm the editor of Howler. Joining me in this little studio, well, digitally, I guess, over the airwaves, Danny Carbassian, who remains to date the only member of this podcast to have scored a goal for Arsenal. He's now a scout for the Gunners. Hey, Danny.
How's it going, George?
I'm okay. I'm still digesting that game that we just saw. We're recording this right after Germany's extra time win over Argentina in the World Cup finals. Also joining us in Bristol, England, not Connecticut. He has the intellect of William Shakespeare, or at least the accent and the haircut of Kyle Beckerman, David Goldblatt. David, I'm going to keep introducing you that way because I love it.
Good evening.
All right. And if you want to just break out some sonnets to maybe...
I got a few sonnets up my sleeve. Maybe a few couplets.
Sure.
Might come your way.
I'm not, honestly, I probably couldn't tell you the difference. So don't, don't embarrass
me. The couplet is shorter.
Okay. We have so much to talk about today. It's the end of the World Cup. Of course, we're talking about the game to end all games, literally the World Cup final, Germany finally winning since what was the last one they won? 1990, and it's the first win for Germany as a unified country. So it's a big game. That was a replay, of course, of that 1990 final, also the 1986 final. Lionel Messi, as we were reminded time and time again, getting a chance to write his legacy. We're going to talk about all of that. We also have Alexander Abnos, who is joining us just minutes after the win with some very happy, sloppy, loud German fans. We're also very excited to introduce the Dummies, our first ever award show. We're going to give out some dummies for performances and both admirable and, you know, less admirable during the World Cup. Finally, our resident curmudgeon, Alan Black, will pay us a visit to give his thoughts on the tournament. So, okay, we got to start on the field and we got to start, I think, in extra time, right? I mean, that Götze goal was a thing of beauty.
It was fantastic. It was fantastic. It wasn't the world's most beautiful game, but it was great that it was crowned and decided by a fantastic goal rather than penalties. And it was, you know, that fantastic run from Schürrle. Deep into extra time, he found the energy somehow to kind of burn down the wing. A fantastic cross floated in and such superb control from Götze with his chest and what appeared to be an effortless volley. It was a fitting moment. And Germany kept going forward. You know, they kept trying to win in extra time and exposed themselves in doing so, you know, took some risks. So I was pleased.
Danny, that goal reminded me of two things. It reminded me, A, of it was the second best chest and left-footed volley goal of this tournament, in my opinion. James Rodriguez, obviously, I think will stand out for me as the goal of the tournament. But it was also a second extra time winner in two World Cups. So Iniesta obviously won the World Cup in 2010 for Spain against the Netherlands. And now Götze has done it again. And in both cases, we have midfielders. It seems like, you know, the midfielder has become just a really key, you know, even more so than usual. They've supplanted strikers maybe as the best goal scorers in the tournament. You have Thomas Müller, who's sort of a midfielder. Neymar is a winger, I would say, more than a striker. What's going on here? Is this something we're going to keep seeing, or is this an anomaly? We had Klose on, obviously, who's the best World Cup goal scorer in history, and he didn't really get very close.
Yeah, I think it's something you'll keep on seeing. I mean, midfielders in general find themselves in quite advanced positions throughout, and they train quite a bit to score when they have these opportunities. I think it's quite, I guess, crazy too that in the 2010 final, Arjen Robben had such a great chance to win it, and Gonzalo Higuain this year had such a great chance to win it for his side, and it ended up being the opposition midfielders who scored and won the tournament for them. I was going to say, back to David's point about it being such a beautiful goal, it's pretty crazy that I think if you threw the ball over Gonzalo Higuain's head 10 times and he was in on goal, he'd probably score 9 out of 10 of those, the way that the ball came out this time. And then with Götze, if you got a ball wide to Sjöerlund 9 out of 10 times and asked him to put a ball straight on his chest and have him take a chest and then do this amazing acrobatic side volley with his left foot, it probably wouldn't go in. But a couple of times, and they scored when it matters, which is obviously extremely important. And it was a fantastic end to a wonderful tournament.
Well, so yeah, the Robin miss, I think, is an interesting way to talk about, a segue into what I want to talk about really, which is that Argentina really, I think, could have had this game sewn up in the first half. They missed some very good chances, and I think they were lucky not to have at least one, maybe two red cards in the first half.
Yeah, I mean, that Higuain chance is going to haunt him forever, I think. And then even, everybody's talking about that chance because he's dragged it wide. But even when he was offsides, like as a top striker, Higuain has to just look across that line and see that he's standing in an offsides position, especially considering he celebrated. He ran about 50 yards before checking his shoulder and realizing that he was offsides. A lot of people were saying that Neuer probably could have been sent off for that challenge. I don't particularly agree. I mean, I think it was a pretty, it was a bad collision for sure, but I think both players had their eye on the ball and it just ended up being a pretty nasty collision. Higuain wasn't looking, he was just looking at the ball and he kind of checked his shoulder probably 10 yards before Neuer actually did hit him. So he did get blindsided, but, at the end of the day, it's two players going for a 50-50 ball.
David, I know you think that challenge was okay. So I'm going to ask you a question that puts you on the back foot. Why was Higuain called for a penalty or called for a foul on that play?
Oh, that was completely incomprehensible to me. I just thought, I don't know.
I mean,
that was,
unbelievable,
you
right?
Tell me.
No, I can't. I can't explain it. Okay. So my take is different from I think both of yours. I think it was a clear penalty. Even if a goalkeeper wins the ball in that situation, which he did, I was saying to Danny, the ball is on one side of a human being. Neuer is on the other side, and he comes through that human being in order to get the ball. You just can't do that. It's not legal. You can't jump and thrust your knee into the head of another player even in the act of winning a challenge. It's just not, it's not within the rules of the game, in my opinion. And that's what happened. That's what I saw. I think that a field player making the same challenge, a center back coming across, winning a header, and in the process going completely through Higuain, who was blindsided, that to me would be a clear penalty in the box.
I was just going to say, I mean, we all speak about the protection that goalkeepers get, and it is more than the outfield players. But in that situation, as I said, like I just think that it happened so fast. I mean, the fact that Higuain gets called for foul is absurd. That had me scratching my head. But I think the play just happened so fast that and it was so different. Like, because Neuer actually sees the ball as he's coming out, and Higuain just has his eye on the ball and doesn't know where Neuer is. So Neuer's doing everything he can. He's just going to jump and then punch the ball where it was naturally. And the fact that Higuain didn't know that contact was going to happen at that point, I think it just makes it look way worse. And I'm not taking anything away from it. It was a horrible collision, and you see Higuain get up and then realize that he was in way more pain than I think he initially thought, and then lay back down. But yeah, I think goalkeepers do tend to get a little bit more protection than outfield players. But that call was a little bit ridiculous.
David, did it have shades of 1982 Schumacher for you?
I did wonder for a moment, but no, that was sort of premeditated and mean and awful. And I think it's like, it's the idea of the 50-50 ball. It's not there in the rules, but it's there in the unspoken culture of the game, is that there are moments in a game where everybody knows as they approach a ball that they're going to contest that something might go wrong and someone actually could get hurt. But all you're doing is focusing on the ball. And Otherwise, we're going to have people pulling out of those kind of challenges. And it just seems to me that kind of breaks the flow so terribly. So I wouldn't want to see that kind of challenge automatically considered a red card, because you've got to leave space for that idea that it is just, it's open. And yes, it is a risk, but people still go for it.
Not necessarily a red card. Let me just clarify, not a red card because of the violence of the act, but a red card because if Higuain, who's I think properly shielding the ball from Neuer by being in between the ball and Neuer, if he gets past him, he's in on goal. There's an empty net waiting for him. That's why I thought red card. I didn't, you know, it's the rule about if you're denying a clear goal scoring opportunity, then you get a red.
Yeah, it's not going to be that clear. I mean, if he is on, you know, it's quite a long way from goal. Like you say, we're on right on the edge of the box. Mm-hmm. And the ball is heading towards the touchline pretty fast, I would have thought. So I'm not sure it's a kind of unambiguous chance on goal.
Okay, maybe I'm biased because I clearly, you know, I didn't know who I wanted to win, really. I didn't have a clear favorite, but I definitely felt it during the game. I wanted Argentina to win. I realized that. And I respect Germany. I think they were definitely the best team in this tournament, no question. But there were several reasons why I wanted Argentina to do well, one of which is because I think Messi is an incredible player. And I think that, you know, as much as I sort of roll my eyes when I hear people on ESPN talking about, oh, the legacy, the narrative, is Messi as great as Maradona just because of one game, I also just want to take that layer off. And I wanted to see him have an amazing game and win the World Cup in Brazil. Maybe I'm too cynical. Should I not write off this idea of Messi's legacy and what this game meant for it? Or, you know, is he still, I mean, is that silly? I guess. David, I want to get your thoughts on that.
I think it's so harsh. It's so harsh to judge, you know, it's an 11-player game, and you know, you can only do, you know, what you get, what the other team give you a chance to do. I think it's just too much to write it on the basis of this. And I also just think too much obsession with Messi. And Germany are the team that won, and they're the best team. And if there's going to be a legacy, and this thing matters a damn in terms of football, then Germany's the thing.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Danny, what about, speaking of that, the supporting cast, if you will, for Argentina, I thought that taking off Lavezzi at halftime was a really odd thing to do, especially when he's going up against a left back in, I don't want to butcher this name, Hovedes, who is not a natural left back. He's a center back, someone you can beat on the wing, and had a yellow card already anyway.
Yeah, I thought the substitutions actually played such a big part. I mean, when you look at the game and how it ended up, especially Germany brought on Schürrle and Götze, and they combined to score the winning goal, whereas Palacio and Aguero probably didn't do nearly as much as you would have liked them to if you're an Argentinian fan, especially going forward. But but as you said, yeah, I thought the Germany, especially in the first half, like they were actually, Argentina was getting, they were enjoying quite a bit of, you know, action down that right-hand side with Messi running past Hovedes and even Hummels. And Germany's right-hand side was far tighter with Lahm and Müller staying a little bit more inside, and Ozil, Hovedes, and Hummels didn't particularly do particularly great down that left-hand side, and Argentina did take advantage of it quite a bit throughout the first half. But it was a bit interesting seeing that, especially because they were on bookings and you thought that they would have just punished them even more down that side.
We're going to get a reaction from Alexander Abnos now. He was at the game and he taped some German fans, some very happy German fans afterward. Here's Alex.
Hey, this is Alex Abnos coming to you from Brazil. I'm in the Germany end of the Maracanã, where it's over about 45 minutes since the end of the World Cup final, and the German fans are still celebrating away. In order to get here, I had to walk through the Argentinian side, which is, as you can imagine, the exact opposite scene. A lot of blank stares. It actually struck me that blank stare and that kind of just totally expressionless face that Lionel Messi wore at the end of the game that everybody was talking about, that exact same face is on just about every single Argentinian fan I saw. There are tears, but mostly there's just kind of sitting and staring into space. I think, you know, they totally know it was right in front of them, and it was a pretty heartbreaking way to lose, albeit with a great goal. German side, on the other hand, they're celebrating their asses off. They're clapping, they're cheering. Like I said, it's over 45 minutes since the game ended, and they're not leaving. Their supporter section is almost entirely full. Something else I noticed was that the neutrals in the stadium almost all swung to Germany as soon as they scored. That, more than anything, I think showed Brazil's preferences for Argentina not to win the cup. There's a lot of yellow shirts mixed in with the white and the red and black ones celebrating here, which is kind of a cool sight to see. Overall, great final, great World Cup. I was happy to be here. This is Alex Abnos signing off for the last time from Brazil.
Thanks, Alex. That was great. We're going to give out some of our own awards, the dummies. We've never done this before, but we've had some nominations. So if you weren't listening to the last podcast or following us on Twitter and seeing all of this, we sort of put out a call for, you know, your best dubious awards, and we got some really great suggestions. Lindsay Adair suggested best goal celebration team dance. That's not all that dubious, but it's really definitely deserving of an award. What do you guys have? We have some great suggestions here. English physio injury, the awkward Robin Van Persie and Louis Van Gaal high five, which was amazing. The Colombia team dancing on the sideline. Miguel Herrera every time Mexico scored a goal. Were there any others that we missed there?
I was just going to say, Tim Cahill did pretty interesting things with the corner flags, oh. I seem to recall. That was there was quite a lot of punching and running around, so they were quite good. What are you saying with the English physio? I mean, it was a good moment, but I don't – was it dancing?
Oh, let me see.
I was going to say, what happened was and I know this because Gary Lewin was our physio when I was at Arsenal, and I felt really bad for him because it actually ended his World Cup. But during the – when they scored against Italy, I think it was in the start, he jumped and then – I mean, apparently he landed on a water bottle and did his ankle basically. So he was carted off. Like, this was while all the celebrations were happening. This was just kind of like behind the scenes, and the cameras went straight to the sled carrying him out of the stadium. And it was from my angle, at least, it was heartbreaking.
I like to think that Hodgson turned to the water boy and said, "You're fired. Get out of here. Give me just surrender your massive credential and get off the pitch." Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay. So what do you guys think? I have to say I loved the dancing because it was choreographed. It was obviously planned out, and you know, I enjoy that. But what do you guys think? We should pick a winner here.
I'm going with the Colombians as well. Yeah. Bananas. Their faces were just ridiculous when they were celebrating those goals. And it was great.
Totally. Okay. Great. Best hair. Best hair to me actually means worst hair. But that's okay.
Yeah.
We can talk about it. So just so everyone knows, when I say best hair, this is not the haircut that I want to have, but it's the haircut that I am really glad exists. Now, David, are you going to be a homer and go for Kyle Beckerman?
Hey, man, I really want his hair to exist, but in a nice way. No, it's got to be Palacios, man, with that crazy little rat tail.
It's so great.
No, that's it's just like no contest. Everybody I know in this house has looked at it and gone, really?
We didn't necessarily.
Really? That's a good idea?
But we didn't necessarily have to pick head hair. Fred's mustache makes an appearance on our list.
Fred's mustache, actually.
So I
that's because that made him, that was really doing nothing for him at all. It was only making a very bad situation even worse. No, I'm with Fred's mustache. You've convinced me.
He shaved it, I believe, recently. And someone wrote that Fred is the only person to have shaved a mustache in order to become anonymous and go undercover.
They did a pretty good job of it on the pitch with a mustache.
Yes. Now, I should mention, Danny, before we get to your choice, I should mention this suggestion came from Pat J. E. Vincent on Twitter, and EA Move1 wrote that Danny Alves didn't die for this, which I think was a great pun, because Danny Alves' hair was really fantastic. He dyed it. What was that, like a gray kind of? Almost a white?
I think was it blonde? I don't know. It was like a bleach job gone wrong, I think.
I don't know.
What it was.
Okay, so we have to pick one. I'm going with Palacio. I think his rat tail was bold. It was original. It was off-center. And so I admire some people who have just such disdain for symmetry. And I think he wins. He was terrible in the final, but his hair was fantastic.
Well, I'm going to put in another call for Fred's moustache. Okay. I think, you know, it had such a preposterous jauntiness.
Danny, you're gonna be the final decider of this, but I'm gonna propose that we give this award jointly and just pray that one day we see someone who combines Palacios rat tail with Fred's mustache.
I'm going with the rat tail as well, and I'm hoping that there's a story behind it, like, and maybe somebody can find like the reason behind it, because as you said, it is off center. And he's actually even balding as well. So it's a very interesting look anyway.
There must be some meaning there. We're going to try to get to the bottom of that. Yeah. Give us some time. Now, last one, biggest howler. We have to ask that one. Obviously, a howler is a terrible mistake. Mine is definitely going to be Wondolowski's miss. Ugh, I don't even want to. I'm not going to explain that. You all know what I'm talking about. What else do you have?
Game in the first round where I think it was France-Honduras, where they forgot the anthems and they had to have the anthems with just the team singing them by themselves, but they lost the recording. So I'm going to go with that.
Excellent. Yeah, that's great. Danny, how about you?
For me, it's a little bit of a tie, but between Abella when he went for the trust fall and yes. Nobody caught him on the sideline when Argentina, I forgot which game it was. I thought that was pretty hilarious. But then also Higuain, I mean, the Higuain miss in the final, that said he's going to be thinking about that forever. It'll haunt him forever. And he should have, I mean, he's a top striker and he should have done better with it.
I'm going to give honorable mention to that Germany trick free kick that they tried. really did not come off, but it was really fantastic to watch. I wish more teams did that. I think it would be really fun to have some choreographed free kick formations that, you know, kids could try at home once they see it on the World Cup.
There may be an honorable mention for David Luiz's clearance in the third, fourth playoff game, pretty much to Daily Blind's feet.
Perfect assist. Perfect. I mean, come on. Okay. Okay, I'm gonna vote actually for Danny's Sabella falling over. I thought it was really hilarious. That's my vote. But actually, the way this works, I guess, David, your vote doesn't matter because I just gave it to Danny.
You should be working at FIFA.
I know.
George.
This is my audition tape. Okay. All right, guys, that was hilarious. Next, our resident curmudgeon Alan Black pays a visit for his glass half empty look at the World Cup.
When the esteemed podcast Dummy sought out a dummy to find the worst parts in something good like the World Cup, I put salt on my cornflakes. My face crunched into a mangled rut of bitterness, much like political pundit Anne Coulter's vicious rant on soccer culture early in the tournament.
It's a really thrilling game.
Coulter plays right wing for un-American United.
No Americans will be watching soccer.
Her dreadful use of punctuation was as deplorable as Brazil's defence against Germany.
It is completely out of control.
Her assertions on the beautiful game as appetising as melted plastic on a frozen dish baked in the microwave for just a little too long. Hand out a Worst of the World Cup award to Coulter. And from the flavours of the bitter to the perennial problem of dandruff, I purchased a bottle of shampoo at the local Target. Lionel Messi's image stamped on the bottle. I knew he was head and shoulders above everyone else, so I imagined that my oily strands would benefit from a boost of Messi magic. Apple-scented too. Perhaps I would be able to keep my promises and not be a flake. I never again shudder in the nightclub when the neon lights came on and I noticed my jacket covered in dead scalp around the neck. No shag to be had here. Sadly, not everyone's dome responds to the messy treatment in a bottle of Head & Shoulders. Worst World Cup consumer purchase based on iconic endorsement. But finally, the worst part of the World Cup for the moaners, the complainers, the naysayers, the unadjusted, the miserabilists, and the salt on the cornflakes brigade is the undisputed fact that the World Cup was absolutely bloody fantastic! Poor old misery. Worse luck.
You have broke my hammer. My hammer's out of line.
We're almost out of time, but before we go, let's do our Tiki Talka segment where we each bring up something from the world of soccer that we really enjoyed from the past week. I'm gonna shoot this one over to you, Danny, first.
I'm just gonna bring up the kind of the presence, and this goes over the course of the month of the World Cup, but just the presence of social media throughout the tournament's been, I think, quite interesting. And I know social media was around in even 2010 for the World Cup in South Africa, but this year in particular, I thought, you know, following the tournament along on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all these apps that have come out as well have made for quite an interesting experience. And I don't know if it's for the better or for the worse at times either, just because I feel like sometimes a lot of people, even when I was with friends watching a game or in a public setting watching a game, I felt like at times people were more concerned about what was going on social media and following the game via Twitter from other people that are watching the game. It's like, let me get my opinion based off what somebody else is saying. But it was interesting. And even FIFA embraced it, you know, on their website. I was kind of browsing the other day and I saw that there's, you can see like the most talked about player throughout the tournament. They have rankings for the most talked about players, for the most talked about teams. And it's changed as the tournament's gone on and all the hashtags and everything that everybody's been talking about. So I thought it was just an interesting kind of a social aspect. Everybody talks about how second screens in sports are becoming so big. And I think this was the first time I realized just how big kind of apps and social media are in today's world.
David, what about you? What'd you got?
Oh, just the tiny little moment before the game kicked off today when the camera panned to the VVIP box. Because FIFA, you know, there's already a lot of VIPs, so you've got to have VVIPs. And there was Putin talking to Blatter and sort of almost lecturing him. And I saw it tweeted later on, a picture of it saying, "Mr. Blatter, actually, I am more evil than you." That's my moment to take away today.
You think they exchange phone numbers so they can text each other now? I imagine.
Oh, I think they're on WhatsApp together anyway.
Sure. I mean, there aren't that many people at that level that you can get tips from and really learn from, you know, as a colleague and a professional. And those two are on the level.
That's a bit disheartening, though, isn't it? Didn't you say that Putin said that he didn't watch Russia in the World Cup at one point?
Well, I mean, you know, he knows when the good soccer happens, so he's not watching.
I think he's also there, as you may remember, guys. We'll be doing this all again in 2018 on his patch.
Yeah. I mean, there's no question he'll be president still. So I think that's you know, it's just good form for him to show up. Okay, mine is, and actually, you know, I kind of wanted to talk about Russia and Qatar, and I think we can do that in the future, but I have mixed feelings about that tournament, and I think it might not be the worst thing for the World Cup to go to those places, because I think that the way that, you know, the media attention on Brazil because of this, I think was generally very healthy for the country, especially the very critical media attention. And I think that something similar could go on with those countries. I mean, I realize that's a very sunny take on it, but I think it's true. I think we'll save that talk for another day. I want to bring up a piece that ran in Slate by Josh Levine, who has been helping us with by getting this podcast into Slate's feed for Hang Up and Listen all summer. He wrote a really great piece called "The Man Who Invented Sports Television's Honey Shot," and this is what I was talking about before: the hottie cam, the practice of sports producers getting B-roll of beautiful women in the stands. And he sort of gives a little bit of a history of this, and he found the guy who invented it. He finds a 2003 interview with this guy who says, "I was the best television director that ever lived." And Josh writes, "Though he wasn't the most modest television director that ever lived, Sedaris did have a long list of accomplishments." And he goes through this guy's life and what he did and sort of, you know, makes the argument that this is one of his biggest legacies, the fact that sports fans all over the world are now seeing beautiful women in the stands because of his work in TV. So it's really worth checking out. Go to Slate and read that story. All right. So the World Cup is over, and that means that our time on the Slate podcast feed is over as well. If you're listening on their site and you've liked what you've heard, please make sure you follow us, subscribe in iTunes or whatever app that you use for podcasts. Give a rating and a comment because it really helps us. You know, Dummy lives on, and we're going to keep this team together. We're going to go to once a week, obviously, because twice a week almost killed us. But I think we come through it, and we're making something that I feel really proud of, and I think that, you know, is going to get better as time goes on. So I'm very excited about it. Danny and David, thank you guys so much for joining us on Dummy all summer. I hope it's been as much fun for you as it has been for me.
Thank you, George.
It's been a pleasure, dude. A pleasure.
All right. That does it for this episode of Dummy. I want to thank our guest, Alan Black, for bringing another wonderfully pessimistic take on the World Cup, and Alexander Abnos for recording those German fans and being with us all summer from his post covering the U.S. national team for USsoccer.com. Of course, our panel, David Goldblatt and Danny Carbassian, who were with us all summer and will continue to be with us as we go once a week following the World Cup. Thanks to Slate, especially the guys at Hang Up and Listen, Josh Levine, Mike Borlo, and Andy Bowers, did a lot of work to help get us onto their feed, which was amazing. Most of all, thank you for listening. If you're not following us on Twitter, please do. We are at What a Howler. We still have our World Cup issue, which might be a little dated now, but there is a ton of really great stuff, including like a 30-plus page timeline of the history of the World Cup. So, you know, you should go check that out. Howlermagazine.com. The Howler Singers are led by Lindsay Elliott. They are members of the choral ensemble Ghostlight, and they made our theme tune. All the rest of the music is by Brian Kim. This podcast was produced by Matthew Nelson with help from Ryan Katniss, Kira Deppenbrock, and Malena Barajas. My name is George Qureshi. Make sure to come back next week for a brand new Dummy. I will not be here. I'll be on my almost 2-year delayed honeymoon, but we have a special guest host for next week, and we will be doing the same as we always do, talking about soccer and all the shenanigans that go on around it. Until then, I wish I could say happy World Cup, but I guess I'll just say see you soon.
For you, the listeners of Dummy, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial. You'll be supporting this podcast and getting a free audiobook. And all you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/holler. That's audibletrial.com/holler.